Okay, so how can we, potentially tap into our body's own natural growth hormone production? It's a big question, lots of buzz around it.
Definitely.
And if you're focused on getting informed efficiently, like we are, you've probably heard the name apomorelin pop up in fitness circles, wellness talks.
It's definitely out there.
But let's maybe forget the online chatter for a second. We want to dive into the science underneath it all, the preclinical stuff. What do those initial studies actually say?
Exactly. We're aiming to cut through the noise, the anecdotes, and look squarely at the foundational scientific work. These preclinical studies, they're the bedrock, really.
Right, the starting point.
Gotcha.
So, okay, just to get us all on the same page, apomorelin, in a nutshell, what is it?
Well, at its core, it's what we call a synthetic pentapeptide. So think a short chain of amino acids made in a lab.
Okay, synthetic, got it.
And it falls into the category of growth hormone secretagogues, GHS for short.
Secretagogue, meaning it makes the body secrete something?
Precisely. It stimulates secretion. And in this case, it's designed specifically to stimulate the release of growth hormone from your pituitary gland.
So it's like a signal molecule, tells the body, okay, make more growth hormone now.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Now, we know people like Andrew Huberman, Joe Rogan, maybe Dr. Conacher, the prep coach, they might discuss apomorelin. We're not dissecting their specific takes today, but it's fair to say their opinions are likely informed by this kind of early research we're looking at, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Any informed discussion has to grapple with this foundational science first. Their interpretations, their expert views, they stem from this level of inquiry.
Okay, good. So let's get into it. What are some of the really interesting findings from these early investigations? What jumps out?
For me, one of the most significant things highlighted early on was its selectivity.
Selectivity. Okay, tell me more about that. Why is that important?
Well, the preclinical studies suggested apomorelin could stimulate growth hormone release from the pituitary without significantly bumping up levels of other important hormones.
Ah, okay. So it's targeted. Which other hormones are we talking about? The ones it doesn't really affect.
We're mainly talking about cortisol, the stress hormone, prolactin, FSH, LH. Those are involved in reproduction, and TSH, the thyroid-stimulating hormone.
And other similar compounds, other GHS, they do affect those.
Some do, yes. Based on preclinical data, things like GHRP6 and GHRP2 were seen to raise cortisol and prolactin levels, for example.
I see.
So the fact that apomorelin didn't seem to do that, or at least not nearly as much, in those early animal studies, well, that pointed towards a potential advantage.
Fewer side effects, maybe a cleaner action.
That was the hypothesis, based on those preclinical observations. More focused effect.
Interesting. Okay, so how does it work? What's the actual mechanism behind this selective release? How does it, flip the switch for a growth hormone?
Well, the preclinical understanding is that it works by binding to a specific receptor. It's often called the Greeling-HS receptor.
Ghrelin, like the hunger hormone.
Exactly. That same receptor, located on the pituitary gland, apomorelin binds there, kind of like a key fitting into a specific lock. And that binding action triggers signals inside the pituitary cells.
Which then leads to more growth hormone being released.
Precisely. It's actually quite similar in mechanism to GHRP6 in that regard. They both use that same receptor docking station, so to speak.
A specific key for the growth hormone door. Now, you mentioned preclinical data. There was stuff on bone growth and body weight, too, in animal models.
Yes, that's right. Some interesting findings there. In studies with rats, specifically adult female rats, administration of apomorelin was shown to increase the rate of longitudinal bone growth.
Longitudinal, like lengthways growth.
Correct, and it was dose dependent. More apomorelin seemed to lead to a greater increase in that bone growth rate.
That sounds potentially significant, thinking about bone health, but again, we have to flag this.
This was in rats. Absolutely. Cruel caveat. Animal model findings don't always map directly onto humans.
And the body weight finding, what was that?
Also, in some animal studies, researchers observed that apomorelin could stimulate an increase in body weight gain.
Just general weight
The
gain.
details weren't always fully teased out in the initial data, like was it muscle, fat, water? But yes, an overall increase in body weight was noted in some animal models. Again, context is key here.
Definitely. Animal studies give clues, hints, but not the final word for people. So let's talk comparisons. You mentioned GHRP6 and GHRP2 earlier. How did apomorelin stack up against them in these early studies?
Yeah, the comparative data is quite revealing, especially about that selectivity point. So if you look at in vitro studies,
meaning like in a test tube or a petri dish.
Exactly, in glass. Using isolated rat pituitary cells, Ipamorelin showed pretty similar potency and efficacy for releasing growth hormone compared to GHRP6.
So on paper, or rather in the dish, they looked quite alike in terms of GH release.
In that specific context, yes.
Yeah.
Similar power, similar maximum effect on GH.
I sense a butt coming.
Well, yes. The picture changed when they looked in vivo.
Okay, in vivo, meaning in a living organism.
Correct, within the living. So in animal models, like studies done in swine, for instance.
Oh, okay. What did they see there?
That's where the selectivity really stood out. In those swine studies, Ipamorelin did not significantly change the levels of FSH, LH, prolactin, or TSH.
Okay. Consistent with the earlier idea.
Right. But in the same studies, GHRP6 and GHRP2 did cause increases in ACTH.
Which signals the release of cortisol.
Exactly. Leading to higher cortisol levels. So that in vivo comparison really strengthened the case, in animal models at least, for Ipamorelin having a more selective action compared to those others.
That makes sense. It reinforces the idea of a more targeted effect in a whole system. What about the overall safety picture from this preclinical phase?
Generally speaking, the preclinical safety evaluation seemed pretty positive. It was reported as being well tolerated in the animal studies they conducted. And crucially, this tied back to the selectivity not significantly stimulating those other hormone pathways, apart from GH.
So that cleaner hormonal profile seen in animals suggested a potentially good safety profile, at least at that early stage.
That was the interpretation, yes.
Okay. So let's recap the pattern from this preclinical work. We're seeing selectivity for growth hormone, fewer effects on other hormones compared to some alternatives in animals, some interesting signals on bone and weight in animals.
Mm-hmm.
But we really need to hammer home the limitations here, don't we?
Absolutely critical. We cannot stress enough. These are primarily preclinical findings, mostly animal models.
And animal results just don't always translate.
They don't. Human physiology is complex, different. There could be a significant gap between what happens in a rat or a pig and what happens in a person.
And we actually have a real-world example of that gap with Ipamorelin itself, right? The clinical trial that was stopped.
Yes, exactly. Ipamorelin went into a phase 2 human trial. They were testing it for something called postoperative ileus, basically, sluggish bowels after surgery.
Okay.
Despite whatever promising signals might have come from earlier work, the human trial was halted. Why? Lack of efficacy. It just didn't work well enough for that condition in people.
Wow. Okay. That's a really stark reminder of the bench to bedside gap.
It really is. Preclinical promise doesn't guarantee clinical success.
So connecting this back.
Yeah.
When we hear discussions in the fitness world or wellness spaces about using Ipamorelin for, say, building muscle, losing fat, better recovery.
Yeah.
We need to remember that the scientific backing for those uses is largely based on these preclinical signals and, let's be honest, a lot of anecdotal reports, right?
That's a fair assessment. The basic science is interesting, no doubt. It suggests potential mechanisms. But the hard evidence from large, well-controlled clinical trials in healthy humans confirming those specific benefits, muscle gain, fat loss, and assessing long-term safety, that's still largely missing.
So the takes from various online figures, even experts, they're interpreting this early data, maybe combining it with anecdotal observations.
Exactly. They're offering perspectives, interpretations, which can be valuable. But it's not the same as definitive proof from rigorous human trials.
Understood. Okay, let's try and pull the key threads together from this deep dive into the preclinical side. What are the absolute main takeaways we should hold on to?
I'd say two things stand out most strongly from that early research. First, the apparent selective nature of its growth hormone release in animal models.
Mm-hmm.
Minimal impact on cortisol, prolactin, etc. That was a big finding.
The targeted action.
Okay.
And second?
Second, how it compared to other GHS like GHRP6 and GHRP2, specifically in those in vivo animal models.
Yeah.
The fact that Ipamorelin didn't seem to boost cortisol ACTH while the others did, that distinction was really highlighted in the preclinical comparisons.
Those differences in the broader hormonal effects. Got it.
Those were key points driving interest early on.
So for you listening to this, aiming to get up to speed efficiently but also thoroughly, understanding this foundational layer, this preclinical science, it gives you a much clearer lens, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It helps you see the difference between, you know, preliminary animal findings and solid human evidence when you encounter claims about Ipamorelin.
Precisely. It gives you context. It equips you to evaluate information more critically. Which leads to a good question for you to maybe ponder.
Oh, go on.
Given that promising selectivity seen in the early research, what are the really crucial questions that human clinical trials must answer before we can say anything definitive about epamorelin's benefits or its risks in actual people? Like what specific results, what outcomes would you need to see proven in rigorous human studies?
That's definitely some good food for thought. What needs to be proven and how?
Yeah.
And of course, we always have to end with this reminder. This is fascinating science, but when it comes down to your personal health, your decisions, especially with compounds like peptides, talking to a qualified healthcare professional, getting personalized advice, that is always, always the most important step.
Couldn't agree more. Essential advice.